Misha wouldn't have told him. Slightly before I wrote the message on the lawn outing her. I shoot my eyebrows up, and Ten stares at him, shocked. That was you? I shoot out. Holy shit! If he knew then, how did he just stand by and play dumb around them this whole time? I guess I was afraid to stand on my own, he explains. Till I saw you doing it 5 seconds ago. You're not punk? Ten gauges as more of a question than a statement. JD just shakes his head. No, it was just that one time. I momentarily wonder if I should tell them who punk is, but no. Wrong time, wrong place, and I'm not sure punk is done yet. I don't want to come out of the closet until I'm ready. I finish cleaning off and open my bag of chips, grateful that everyone in the room has seemed to resume their conversations. Thanks, no doubt, to JD and Ten's arrival. I guess what I always thought is actually true. There is safety in numbers. So, I got a limo for prom, JD tells me, looking around at everyone. Group date? Ten nods, but Manny and I are silent. I trust Ten, but I'm not entirely sure about JD yet. Everything I've noticed from him the past couple of weeks tells me he's on the up and up, but now I'm paranoid. I don't want to get suckered into going to prom and, whoops, now I'm soaked in animal blood like in Carrie. This isn't a joke, is it? I ask him. You're cool? He looks at me thoughtfully. If Mason's not there, they'll have to go through me to get to you. And then he glances at Manny. You too. And believe me, no one likes to go through me. I can't help but smile. He's 180 pounds of future USC football player, and while he's always been pretty harmless, people know they shouldn't mess with him. Sounds good then. I'd love to. I turn to Manny. You? You got a dress? Ten pipes up, asking him. Manny frowns, shooting him a dirty look. Do you? Ten smiles, and Manny seems to relax a little. He doesn't answer, but I'll call him later. He doesn't trust us, and I don't want to push him right now. Everyone gets busy eating. JD steals food off everyone's trays, and I take out my phone and go to text Misha. I hope he doesn't mind getting asked to prom. But then I think better of it and go to Google to find his Facebook. I've read so much about his life, and now I'd like to see it, I think. I'm guessing the last thing he wants to talk about is prom, but I'd like to put it out there sooner rather than later for him to think about, at least. But as I type in Misha Lair Grayson into the search engine and scroll to find what I need, I'm suddenly lost in more information than I can handle. My stomach sinks, and my heart races. Oh my God. Chapter 20. Ryan. The cove looms ahead, massive and imposing under the gray clouds. I park next to Misha's truck and climb out of my Jeep, making my way to the entrance. Now I know why he stopped riding 3 months ago. I should never have let it go as long as I did. It was completely selfish to sit there and wait for him to come around and write me back, assuming his issue was small and insignificant, and that protecting the status quo of our relationship was more important. Of course, he wouldn't have stopped writing for anything trivial. He'd been committed to me for 7 years. Why did I think he'd be so cavalier about dropping me all of a sudden? And now I know why he's been hiding out here, away from his dad, too. It all makes sense. Almost. Walking into the park, I feel the cool breeze from the downpour yesterday brush my arms. The air is thick and weighted, and the clouds overhead threaten more of the same. I hug myself against the slight chill. Looking around, I walk past the rides and old gaming booths, spotting the field house ahead. I enter and make my way down the dark stairwell, instantly seeing a light down the corridor. This place freaks me out. I'd heard some people from Thunder Bay were buying the property and had plans to tear down the old theme park and turn it into a hotel with a golf course and a marina and all that, but it might have been just a rumor. I'd be sad to see the place go, but yeah, I turn corners half expecting to see death clowns cackling among the decay. Too many horror movies, I guess. Misha's room is lit up, and I see the lamp on the bedside table turned on as well as some candles on another table across the room. He's lying back on the bed, his feet on the floor and his ears covered with headphones, as he taps his thigh with a pencil. There are a few boxes that look filled with his belongings sitting next to the door. But other than the bed, table, and lamp, everything else is packed away. I smile softly, unable to tear my eyes away from him. The way his foot is tapping to the beat that I hear playing out of his headphones, the way the ring in his lip makes his mouth look like something to eat, and his dark brown hair, damn near black, wispy like he was just outside in the wind. My heart aches, my stomach somersaults, and my lungs fill with air that sends a shiver down my spine. I love him. Stepping over, I climb on top of him, straddling his waist and planting my hands on either side of his head. He jerks and opens his eyes, his gaze turning gentle and happy when he sees me. He pulls off his headphones. Are you okay? I know he was probably concerned about leaving me at school around Trey and Lila without him. I nod. I'm tempted to tell him about my day. Trey's threats, Manny in the bathroom, JD and Ten at lunch. But no more distractions. Why didn't you tell me about Annie? I ask him. His expression turns somber, and he slowly sits up. I move off him, sliding onto the bed and sitting at his side. I would have, he says, avoiding my eyes as he turns off his iPod. I was just waiting for us to calm down. I can understand that, but I'm not talking about when he came here as Mason. I'm talking about in his letters. I heard about it and saw the name online, I tell him. But why did you tell me your last name was Lair? When I heard about the 17-year-old girl who died on Old Point Road from a heart attack, I'd read her name was Anastasia Grayson. Annie, I gather, is short for Anastasia, but Misha never told me his real last name? Lair is my middle name, he replies, a family name. Everyone in Thunder Bay knows the Graysons, and my grandfather is important. There's always been pressure to be and act a certain way. It was so aggravating as a kid. And when I started writing you, I saw it as an opportunity to kind of be free. Not really thinking that a kid our age probably wouldn't know who Senator Grayson was anyway. He gives a weak laugh. I legally changed it to Lair when I turned 18, though. It suits me a lot better. So I guess I wasn't the only one pretending to be someone else. She was an honor student, he explains. An athlete, and she was always picture perfect. I wondered how she did it. How she found the time and energy to be everything she was, but it wasn't until too late that I realized what she was doing to her body. There were signals, and we missed it. Taking money out of my wallet, the hours she kept, the decreased appetite. I'd read the details when the police finally released her name all those months ago. She was jogging, it was late, and she was alone. Her car was dead, so they guessed she was trying to run to a gas station or something. She'd collapsed with her phone in her hand, and by the time help got to her, she was gone. It was later determined she'd been abusing drugs for quite some time. I didn't follow the story and wasn't very invested at the time. She was just a girl I didn't know. But I'd heard enough to know the details, and I want to cringe thinking back to the times I thought about it, not realizing who she was. Misha's sister. It was the night we met at the scavenger hunt, I say, remembering the date in the news article. He nods absently, still staring off. You and I were inside talking, and she was dying. I look away. I couldn't stomach anything after that, he explains. I stopped writing because I couldn't talk about it, but I couldn't talk about anything else either. I couldn't carry on like before, and I couldn't face the reality of her being gone. I felt sick. He finally looks over at me. I needed you, but I just didn't know how to talk to you anymore, or anyone. I'd changed. You can talk now. He smiles, easing me back to his lap. Yeah, I'm not sure I could ever give you up again. I touch my forehead to his, not knowing what I would do without him. I hate that he stopped writing. I hate that he pretended to be Mason. But I'm so glad we're here. I just really hate that it was his sister's death that brought him here. I understand why you stopped writing and why you came here to get away, but I look him in the eyes. Why did you enroll at school? If it wasn't for me, what was it for? He shakes his head, letting out a breath. Nothing. Misha. Really, it was nothing, he tells me, cutting me off. I thought I had another reason to be here, someone who I used to know, but no. It was dumb, and I feel stupid. I shouldn't have come. And then he smiles, wrapping his arms around me. But I'm not sorry I did. I cock my head, aggravated. He's being cagey again. I love you, he says. That's all that matters. And he looks so calm and happy, I don't want to ruin it. I take in a deep breath and relax into him. Can I have the scarf back? Yeah. I love you, I say, my fingers tingling as my heartbeat picks up. His fingers grip my waist. It's about fucking time. I breathe out a laugh, kissing him. He's always gotta bust my chops. And I think it's about time I met your mom, he states. Ugh, do we have to? I trail kisses over his cheek and down his neck, more interested in something else right now. You think she won't like me? I sigh, looking back up at him. My mom is lovely, but she's strict. Seeing me in love and giddy and everything, her first concern will be making sure I don't blow off college to get married. Well, you are the grandson of a senator, I guess, I tell him. Can we lead with that? He snorts, shaking his head at me. I guess that's a no. Okay, fine, I snip. But afterwards, I have a favor to ask. Ask me now. I cage. I'll tell you in the truck. It's kind of illegal. Chapter 21. Ryan. I pick up the small duffel and hear the clank of a few cans inside. Well, I guess it's better than it was. I don't want to alert my family when I take it downstairs, so I've wrapped the cans in some clothes, hoping to drown out the sound. Tonight is my final little foray, and Misha is helping. Only this time, I have no guilt about it. We're rebels with a reason. Okay, a little reason, at least. Checking myself in the mirror one last time, I grab the bag and hear the doorbell ring, smiling. He's here. Leaving my room, I lift the hem of my dress as I step down the stairs. My mom and sister are camped out in the living room, huddled around a bowl of popcorn and scary movies tonight. But really, they're just waiting to see Misha again. When I brought him home last week, my mom immediately liked him. A lot. Especially with our history. She knows how much Misha means to me, and to finally meet him was incredible. My sister, I think, was just aggravated. Oh, look, he didn't ditch me. He likes me. He loves me. And he's hot. But she's been on my case less the last week, and I've tried to make an effort with her. After all, my relationship with my sister is as much my fault as it is hers. She may have been a brat as a kid, hating that she always had to hold my hand so I wasn't alone. But as we grew up, I was the one who pulled away. I'm trying to watch my mouth now and not build a wall every time she enters my space. It'll take some time, but I think we'll get there. She even did my hair for me tonight. I reach the bottom of the stairs, seeing my mom already heading through the foyer. I set the bag down and stand back up just as she opens the door. Misha stands there, tall and dressed in a black suit, white shirt, with a black tie. Everything fits him perfectly, and he even has his tie tightened. His hair is styled, and the only thing that looks the same is the silver lip ring. His collar even covers the bit of ink that trails up his neck. I love how he normally looks in dresses, but there's something about him in a suit. He looks so grown up, and really hot. And I appreciate the effort he puts forth to impress my mom. When I brought him home the first time, he grabbed a hoodie out of the truck and put it on before we entered the house, pulling down the sleeves to cover up his ink. He was worried my mom would judge him before she knew him. But that changed when she showed him the little kanji tattoo she had on her shoulder from college. Back when kanji was the rage. He relaxed a little. His eyes lock with mine and then fall down my dress, a sleeveless red floor-length gown with a high neck, and jeweled and pearled spaghetti straps across my bare back. My sister did my makeup, too, and my mom played music and made chocolate-covered strawberries while we all had fun getting me ready. Originally, the plan was to go with Lila and the girls to the salon, but today was perfect. I'm glad I spent it with my family. I hold up my hands, posing and teasing. So, do I look cute? He steps in and walks up to me, leaning in to kiss my cheek. That's not the word I would use, he whispers. You both look great, my mom chimes in. You don't match, my sister retorts, and I look up to see her entering the foyer. She's dressed in her skimpy sleep shorts, probably for Misha's benefit, and I fantasize about putting vinegar in her mouthwash. Match? Like his tie and my dress? But Misha looks at her and places his hand on his heart, feigning sincerity. We match in here. I snort, breaking into quiet laughter. My sister rolls her eyes, and my mom shakes her head, smiling. All right, let's go, I say. I lean down to take the bag, which my mom thinks contains a change of clothes for the parties we're not going to later. But she shouts, pictures! And I stop. Letting out a small sigh, I step down the last stair, and he turns me around, putting my back to his chest. traditional cheesy prom pose. He explains. Oh, well then, if we must. My sister folds her arms over her chest, looking discontented as she watches my mom snap shots of us. Of course I want pictures. I'm not a party pooper. But I have that first picture of us at the scavenger hunt, and I feel like Misha's just doing me a favor, coming along with the boys and me. I don't want to put him on the spot. But surprisingly, he seems to enjoy this. Turning me around, he wraps his arms around me and looks into my eyes, my mom taking a couple of quick pics. My heart is already thumping hard, and I stare at his mouth, feeling my body warm up. I'd really just rather be alone with him tonight. Get a room, Carson whines, and turns around, heading back into the living room. I continue to stare at Misha. Ryan, be home by 2, Mom says. It's prom, I point out. It's kind of an all-night thing. 2, she repeats, looking between us, her warning clear. But I argue anyway. 7. 3. 3, and Misha can come back for breakfast in the morning, I press. She nods easily. Fine, but beignets, not jalapeno bagels. I know. I take the bag gingerly, careful not to make the cans bang into each other, and whisper to Misha as I head past him, hopefully you'll be here extra early because I'm not going to let you leave. He laughs quietly and opens the door, leading me out. He probably doesn't want to risk getting on my mother's bad side now that they've met, but he knows he won't be able to say no to me. We walk down the steps, and he takes the bag from me as I spot the limo sitting at the curb. Walking over, I stop and let him open the door. Hey! Voices drift out. I see JD, Ten, and Manny all sitting inside, snacking and drinking sodas. But if I know Ten, there's alcohol going on somewhere in here. Hey, why didn't you guys come in? I ask as I climb inside. A prom picture with 4 guys? JD teases. Think of what Lila would Facebook about that. Yeah, right. But then the car door closes, and I dart my eyes over to see Misha leaning down and peeking in the open window. What are you doing? I ask. I'll see you at prom. What? He starts to walk away, and I stick my head out of the window. Misha! He turns around, walking backward, and I notice his truck behind him. He must have driven here, and the guys pulled up after. Don't worry, he calls, and have fun. I'll be there. I stare after him, completely confused. He's taking the bag with him, too. He's not going to do anything without me, is he? Damn it. I sit back in my seat, frowning. Now I don't get to walk into prom with 4 men. I feel the limo start moving, and I notice the inside is also silent. Looking up, I see Manny, Ten, and JD all staring at me. And then JD speaks up. Who's Misha? The Baxter Hotel is decked out when we arrive. White lights glow in the trees, and beautiful turn-of-the-century lanterns flicker with small flames, leading us into the ballroom. The fast music vibrates out into the lobby, and I can already smell the food. We sent the limo back, hoping Misha will have his transportation when he gets here, but as we enter the prom, I still don't see him. The room is exquisitely decorated in black and green, our school colors, with balloons, candles, and white linen tablecloths. I look up to the stage where the band is playing a cover. Do you see him? I yell into Ten's ear. He winces, turning away from his conversation with Manny to answer me. I haven't looked for him. Okay, relax. We just got here. But things have finally calmed down between Misha and me, and we're having fun. I just don't want something dumb to screw it up. I came clean to the guys in the car, figuring there was no harm anymore in telling them Mason's real name. Misha said he wasn't coming back to school, and I have real friends again. I feel awkward about lying. Do you want something to drink? Ten asks, indicating his breast pocket. I wave him off. Wanna dance? JD asks at my other side. I gaze around again, looking for Misha. Yeah, I finally answer. Why not? He told me to have fun. JD leads me out onto the dance floor while Ten and Manny sit down at a table. I glance back at them, seeing Manny look around nervously like the other shoe is about to drop. But then, Ten reaches over and grabs him by the tie, pulling him in closer so he can straighten it. I almost laugh. Manny looks taken aback, but a look passes between them, and I'm kind of curious. Nah, Ten would never date a goth. JD and I join everyone else on the dance floor, moving to the music as others laugh and talk. The energy and atmosphere is incredible. It's dark and crowded, and it feels like what Misha talked about in one of his letters. About realizing you're one of many and not feeling so alone. I almost feel unseen, not on display, and I kind of like it. The song ends, and I fall into JD, breathing hard and laughing. The fog machine and heat of so many crowded around is weighing on me, and I reach into my wrist purse and pull out my inhaler. I look around, hesitant. I usually go in the bathroom. Screw it. Taking a puff, I see JD do a double take, but he only looks surprised as I take another one and try to inhale. You okay? I nod, giving him a thumbs up. I'm fine. I slip the inhaler back into my purse and let him come in close. He places his hands on my waist as we slow dance. I can't believe what I am seeing, someone says. I turn around and lock eyes with Lila and Caitlin, who are glaring as everyone dances around us. Lila's arms are folded over her hot pink dress. It's almost too precious for words, she muses. Caitlin smirks behind her, and I drop my head forward, faking a snore. Oh, I'm sorry. I pop my head up, looking at JD. I fell asleep. What happened? He chuckles. In all honesty, though, I deserve Lila's animosity. I wasn't a good friend. But with her, I'm not sure anyone can be. I notice Trey lumbering toward her from behind and watch as he falls on her, draping his arms over her. His eyes are hooded and he can barely stand. Hey, how goes it? He slurs, gesturing between JD and me. You too, huh? You skip around pretty fast, girl. I like it. Oh, please. I turn away from him, but not before I see Lila trying to shrug him off. Come on, he calls behind me. Friends share, JD. You take mine for a spin, and I'll take yours. Trey grabs my arm, but JD knocks him off. Stay away from her. Trey comes in again, but I steel every muscle inside of me. Enough. But just then, a voice rings out, and I stop. Thanks for letting us intrude, everyone, Misha says, and I blink, realizing the music has stopped. Tearing my eyes away from Trey, I look up on stage and see Misha standing at the microphone. He's still wearing his suit, but he has a guitar draped in front of him, and we meet each other's eyes as a small smile dances in his. I take a step, drawn in. We're Cypher Core, and this is dedicated to the cheerleader, he says. My heart leaps into my throat, and I notice his bandmates on stage, the same guys with him in the YouTube video I saw. Hey, it's Mason, JD says, mumbling, Misha. The drums count off, the beat starts, and the guitars lead in, creating a fast and hard but soulful tune. Misha's voice drifts in slow and haunting, but quickly picks up pace. Anything goes when everyone knows. Where do you hide when their highs are your lows? So much, so hard, so long, so tired. Let them eat until you're ground into nothing. Don't you worry your glossy little lips. What they savor eventually loses its flavor. I want a lick while you still taste like you. Bookmark it, says the cheerleader. I promise we'll come back to this spot. I have shit to do first. You won't wait a lot. I can't make her stay, and I can't watch her go. I'll keep her hellfire heart, and bookmark it before it goes cold. 57 times I didn't call. 57 letters I didn't send. 57 stitches to breathe again, and then I fucking pretend. 57 days to not need you. 57 times to give up on you. 57 steps away from you. 57 nights of nothing but you. His eyes are closed and his face is so beautiful. Everything inside me is crumbling because it's the most perfect song I've ever heard. And I want him to keep going. When did he write that? When we were fighting? Before we met? A chaperone walks on stage after the song ends and cocks her head disapprovingly at the band. They smile and take off their instruments, quickly getting out of there, because while they may have had permission to perform a song, they probably didn't have permission to say a few of the words that were in those lyrics. I laugh as Dane takes a dramatic bow and the crowd cheers. I don't even know what just happened. Were people dancing? Where's Trey and Lila? I don't know, and I don't care. Misha hands off his guitar to one of the guys, and I inch forward through the crowd, waiting for him to come to me. He hops down off the stage as the other band takes over again and starts playing. He comes up and wraps his arm around me under my ass and lifts me up. I laugh, even though tears wet my face. I touch his cheek, looking down at him. I didn't want to cry. A lot of your words are in those lyrics, he tells me. We do more than a few things really well together, you know? Good and bad. He stretches his neck up, brushing my lips. And I want it all. I kiss him, everyone else forgotten. So that was 57. He'd sent me pieces of the song in the past year, but I'd never heard the whole thing. I love you, he whispers. And I'm ready to leave as soon as you are, so keep me posted. I'm ready. He smiles and sets me down. Let's go have some fun. He takes my hand and we walk through the crowd of dancers, running into JD as we pass the food tables. Where are you guys going? He asks. I glance at Misha and he shrugs. There's a girl whose name I don't know at JD's side. I don't want to take him away from her or the after parties, but... Can you disappear with us for an hour? He thinks about it and sets his plate down. I'm in. Remember you said that, I warn. He whispers something to the girl and jogs after us while Misha knocks on 10 and Manny's table. Let's go. We all pile into Misha's truck, and I see my duffel sitting on the passenger side floor as I climb in. So where are we going? 10 asks as Misha starts the engine and pulls out of the parking lot. To the school. I pull on my seatbelt and put the bag in my lap, unzipping it. Why? I shoot a look to Misha, everything in his expression telling me to go ahead. I pull out a can of the washable spray paint. Because it's nearly the end of the year, and I have a few more things to say. I hold up the can and look behind me, seeing Ten's eyes damn near bug out of his head. What? He bursts out. You? JD looks at me, shocked. I meet Manny's eyes, and I can see the wheels in his head turning. Maybe he realizes it was me who wrote the message on his locker that first time. You're not alone. It gets better. You are important, and you can't be replaced. Hang on. I fill them in on everything, how it started and how I justified it, but I also tell them what I still need to do tonight. One last time to make it count. And since they all will have something to say about the subject, I thought they might want a hand in it, especially since Ten already indicated he'd like a piece of the action, and JD has already participated once. So, are you in? I ask them. Hell yeah, JD replies. I look at Manny, who remains silent. You don't have to. I'm not asking any of them to get in trouble. They can wait in the truck, or we can take them back to prom right now. But he nods, indicating the can in my hand. I want black. All right. I dig in the bag, doling out cans and reminding them to stick to surfaces that can be easily cleaned. Stay away from screens, posters, artwork, and uniforms or clothes in the locker rooms. We reach the school and park on the south side, slipping through the gate and running through the lot, up to the pool room. I hand Misha my can and pluck my key out of my handbag. You have a key? JD asks, surprised. I can't believe they never thought of questioning you before. Yes, I have a key. Often I'm the last one out of the pool, and this is my job. I'm entrusted to lock up this door. I'm Ryan Trevorrow, I joke. I'm a bubblehead with barely enough brain cells to breathe. Quiet chuckles go off around the group, and I unlock the door, hurrying everyone inside. How do you know no one will see it tomorrow and get rid of the paint before Monday? Misha asks. It's Saturday night, so it's possible. But roofers will be here tomorrow to fix the leaks, I explain. Teachers are being asked to stay out of the building for safety. I look around at all of them. You know what to do? Yep. Absolutely. Ready. Okay, then. Let's go. Monday morning, Misha and I walk into school, staring ahead as the storm whirls around us. A big part of me knows we shouldn't have done it. There are all kinds of ways to handle our problems, after all. Better ways to deal with the issues. But what Misha said was true. Everyone is ugly, aren't we? Some wear it, and some hide it. I guess I just got tired of Trey hiding it. And of everyone allowing him to keep it hidden. I did a bad, bad thing. Oh my God, a guy mumbles off to my side, and I look over to see him reading something I'd written Saturday night. Hey, did you see this? A girl gasps, asking her friend as they gape at the opposite wall. I look down the corridor, seeing several messages written here and there and people fluttering about, taking it all in. You shouldn't be caught alone with me. You've been asking for this. Trey Burrows. Can you even find your dick anymore, faggot? Trey Burrows. I'm going to fuck her and then fuck her mom. Watch me. Every corner you turn, every night when you go to sleep, I'll be there, and I'm going to find out exactly what I've been missing. Doesn't take long for you little bitches to turn slut once you get a taste for it. You should have seen the train we pulled on this girl last week. She had guys lined up. It was so fucking good. Head down, ass up. That's the way we like to fuck. Tray, tray, and more tray. We keep walking, passing the quotes all four of us wrote on the walls, lockers, and floor Saturday night, turning down another hall and seeing even more. Not all of them are about Trey, though. Some of them are attributed to Lila, Caitlin, a couple of Trey's friends, and even me. Because, of course, saying you're sorry is easy. Facing the shame is where atonement begins. One of these nights, I'll get you in the parking lot, and I'll spread those pretty legs and fuck you right there on the ground. Would you like that, baby? Trey burrows. That's disgusting, a junior girl says, wincing. Another girl takes out a pencil and writes underneath the "they all want it" message. No, we don't, she writes. The hallways are a flurry of activity, and we try to keep our posts to the two main corridors, mostly because everyone passes through these hallways when they come into school. People are captivated, though. Some girls look angry and disgusted. Some guys are surprised. All students, please report to the auditorium, the vice principal's voice carries over the loudspeaker. All students, please report to the auditorium. Ten stops us in the hallway, looking nervous but amused. Looks like we broke the bank on this one. Yeah. I offer him a tight smile and watch more students writing under the messages on the wall. Look at them, though. Speak your mind and you give others permission to do the same. I turn to Misha, sighing. You should leave. You don't need to be here, and she's going to pull you in if she finds you. Since he walked out on Burroughs over a week ago, he hasn't been back to school. But I think he was worried about how all this would go down today and wanted to be here. He shakes his head. I don't care. Well, the police just got here, Ten informs us. The police? I whisper. I didn't think what we did was that bad. No, it's not for the vandalism. It's for Trey. A bunch of kids, several girls, are in the office, ratting him out. I guess the posts got to them. You should really go then, I tell Misha. But just then, Principal Burroughs approaches us, and my heart skips a beat. Mr. Laurent, come with me now. He stares at her for a moment. But I jump in. Why? I think he knows why. He hesitates for a moment, and I think he's going to fight like last time, but he doesn't. He takes a step. No, 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 I burst out. He didn't do anything. It's okay, he assures under his breath. But Burroughs interjects, looking at me. I show you on the log as the last person, other than the janitor, to sign out and leave the school Friday evening, she tells me. Now, that's not unusual, since you stay late to teach swim lessons, but then it occurred to me that you have a key, and then I remembered the company you've been suddenly keeping. She glances at Misha. Did you take her key? No, I answer for him. Yes, he says. Oh, Jesus. It's okay, he says again. I'll be fine. She leads him away, and I throw up my hands, feeling helpless. Why didn't he just walk out like last time? He doesn't have to protect me, and he knows I won't let him take the fall. What is he doing?
Chapter 22. Misha. Sit down. I prefer to stand, but I'm guessing I may as well settle in. I take the seat in front of her desk. After the fights and your behavior the past few weeks, I've been calling the phone numbers on file, she tells me, closing her office door. None of them work, or they're wrong numbers. You want to tell me what's going on? I stare at her as she takes her seat behind her tidy little desk. Unbuttoning her suit jacket, she scoots in and opens a file undoubtedly mine. It's nearly empty, but I keep quiet. If you had a concern about Trey, you should have come to me, she demands. Not break into the school and write horrible accusations on the wall. Accusations? Were the pictures she found in her bedroom not clear enough? Where is he? I ask. She straightens. I've sent my stepson home for the day while we sort through this mess. I feel like smiling, but I don't. I simply stare at her. With the amount of upset students outside her door right now, I'm guessing the mess will take quite a while to sort through. "Where are your parents?" she asks. "My father lives in Thunder Bay."
"And your mother?"
"Gone." She exhales a sigh and folds her hands on her desk. She knows she's not going to get anywhere like this. Reaching over, she picks up the phone receiver and holds it to her ear.
"Give me your father's phone number."
My fingers curl, but I don't give myself away. This is it. 742-555-3644.
"What's his name?"
She punches in the number.
"His real name."
I hear the lines start ringing and my heart pounds painfully, but I remain stoic. "Matthew," I answer flatly. "Matthew Lair Grayson." She suddenly goes still and darts her eyes up to me. Her breathing speeds up and she looks like she's seen a ghost. Well, she remembers his name, that's something at least.
My father's voice comes across the other line.
"Hello?"
And she looks back down and I see her swallow the lump in her throat, blinking nervously.
"Matthew?"
"Jillian?"
She hangs up the phone like it's burning hot and covers her mouth with her hand. I almost want to smile, just to add to the taunt. She raises her eyes, locking on mine and looking like she's scared of me.
"Misha?"
"Yep."
"And awesome. She remembers my name.
2 points for Mom.
Now she knows. Me choosing to come to this school and sit in this office had nothing to do with Trey. It was about her. "What do you want?"
she asks, and it sounds like an accusation. I laugh to myself.
"What do I want?"
And then I drop my eyes, whispering to myself. "What do I want?" I raise my chin and cock my head, sitting across from her and holding her fucking accountable.
"I guess I wanted a mom. I wanted a family, and I wanted you to see me play the guitar," I tell her. "I wanted to see you Christmas morning and to smile at me and miss me and hold my sister when she was sad or lonely or scared."
I watch as she just sits there silently, her eyes glistening.
"I wanted you to like us. I wanted you to tell my father that he was a good guy who deserved better than you and that he should stop waiting for you. I wanted you to tell us to stop waiting."
I flex my jaw, getting stronger by the moment. This isn't about me. I'm done being hurt and asking myself questions when I know the answers won't be good enough.
"I wanted to see you," I go on. "I wanted to figure you out. I wanted to understand why my sister died of a heart attack at 17 years old, because she was taking drugs to keep her awake to study and be the perfect daughter, athlete, and student so you would come back and be proud of her and want her."
I study her face, seeing Annie's brown eyes staring back, pained and turning red.
"I wanted to understand why you didn't come to your own child's funeral,"
I charge.
"Your baby, who was lying on a dark, wet, cold road for hours alone while your new kids..."
I shove at a picture frame on her desk, making it tumble forward.
"In your new house," another picture frame. "With your new husband,"
the last picture frame. "We're all tucked safe and warm in their beds, but not Annie. She was dying. Alone, having never felt her mother's arms around her." She hunches forward, breaking down and covering her mouth with her hands again. This can't be a surprise. She had to know this was going to happen someday. I mean, I know she hasn't seen me since I was 2, but I thought for sure she would know me. That first day, seeing her in the lunchroom, I felt like she was going to turn around. Like she'd be able to sense me or some shit. But she didn't. Not then. Not when she pulled me into her office for a, "Hey, how are you?" And not any time after that. She deserted us and moved away when Annie was just a baby. After a time, I heard she went to college and started teaching, but honestly, it barely hurt. I could understand being young. 22 with two kids, and not to mention the cutthroat family she married into, but I thought she'd eventually find her way back to us. And later, when Annie and I found out she was only one town away, married to a man who already had a son, and she'd started a family with him and still hadn't made the slightest effort to seek Annie and me out, I got angry. Annie did everything in the hope our mother would hear about her or see her team in the paper and come for her. Now? I say, my tone calm and even. I don't want any of those things. I just want my sister back. I lean forward, placing my elbows on the tops of my knees. And I want you to tell me something before I leave. Something I need to hear. I want you to tell me that you were never going to look for us. Her teary eyes shoot up to me. Yeah, I might have convinced myself that I came here to collect the photo album of my sister's school pictures and newspaper clippings Annie said she mailed her here that I found in her file cabinet and my grandfather's watch, but really, part of me had a shred of hope. Part of me thought she might still be a good person and have an explanation, a way to tell me why, even in death, Annie's mom still didn't come for her. I want you to tell me you don't regret leaving, and you haven't thought about us a single day since you left, I demand. You were happier without us, and you don't want us. Misha, say it, I growl. Let me leave here free of you. Give me that. Maybe she missed us and didn't want to disrupt our lives. Maybe she missed us and didn't want to disrupt her life. Or maybe that part of her life is broken and over and she doesn't want to go back. Maybe she doesn't care. But I do know that I can't care about this anymore. I stare at her and wait for her to say what I need to hear. I wasn't going to look for either of you, she whispers, staring at her desk with tears streaming down her face. I couldn't stay. I couldn't go back. I couldn't be your mother. I slam my hand down on her desk and she jumps. I don't give a shit about your excuses. I won't feel sorry for you. Now say it. Say you were happier without us and you didn't want us. She starts crying again, but I wait. I'm happier since I left. She sobs. I never think about you and Annie, and I'm happier without you. She breaks down as if the words are painful to say. The sadness creeps up my throat, and I feel tears threatening, but I stand up, straighten my spine, and look down at her. Thank you, I reply. Turning, I walk for the door but stop, speaking to her with my back turned. When your other daughter, Emma, turns 18, I will be introducing myself to her, I state. Do yourself a favor and don't be an asshole. Prepare her before that time comes. And I open the door, leaving the office. I step into the empty hallway and make my way for the entrance, the distance between my mother and me growing. With every step, I feel stronger. I won't regret leaving, I say to myself. I won't think about you a single day from now on. I'm happier without you, and I don't need you. I'll never look for you again. Did you ask her why she left? No. I sit against the wall in Annie's room with Ryan resting against me between my legs. You're not curious about her reasoning, she presses. How she would justify it? I used to wonder, but now I don't know. It's not that I don't care, but if someone doesn't want us, we need to stop wanting them. I used to tell myself that, and now I believe it, I tell her. It's not so hard, facing her and walking away. If she wanted to explain, she would have. If she could have, she would have. She didn't chase after me. She knows how to find me if she wants to. Ryan smooths her hands down Annie's blue scarf. So, that's why you were in Falcon's Well. Yeah, she had the watch. an heirloom gifted by my father's father for her and my dad at their wedding, I say, burying my nose in her hair. Family tradition dictates it goes to the firstborn son. She took it when she left, maybe to spite my dad or pawn it for money if she needed. But somehow she ended up giving it to Trey. You must have hated her for that.
I already hated her, I shoot back.
That hurt, though. She'd already abandoned us. How could she steal one more thing, especially something that rightfully belonged to me? She was selfish and spiteful. And maybe she isn't the same person now that she was then, but I'm not waiting for her like Annie did. I hug Ryan close. This, right here, is everything. I can't wait to live all the days I'm going to live with her. We're going to have a hell of a lot of fun. Especially since I no longer have to worry about that cocksucker at school with her for the rest of the year. She got a text from Ten earlier saying he heard that the superintendent stepped in and forbade Trey from stepping foot on school grounds until everything clears up. And since a few students are pressing charges for the photos and various assaults, it looks like the next several months of Trey's life will be spent in court. Ryan stands and pulls me up, both of us trailing out of the room. I'd come in here to put Annie's locket and photo album back. There had also been letters with the album in the envelope I'd taken from our mother's office, too. Annie didn't tell me she'd written her, just that she'd sent her a photo album of her pics and stuff. She made sure to leave photos of me out of it, though. She knew I wouldn't have liked that. Maybe I shouldn't have taken the album and letters. After our mother never showed up to the funeral, though, I just didn't want her to have anything of Annie's. But Annie gave them to her, I guess. It was her wish our mother have those things. If she wants the envelope back, she can have it. But she has to come and ask. I close the door quietly behind me and walk into my room, seeing Ryan sitting on the bed reading a piece of paper. "What's this?" she asks. I look down at the white paper. It's a letter. She folds it up and sets it down. "Well, I didn't read it or anything, but it could be an offer to talk about a recording contract." She smirks. "And there's several more there." She points to the bedside table. "I didn't read those either, but I was wondering if maybe they could be letters of interest, too. I'll bet some well-connected dudes have seen CypherCore's YouTube videos and want to talk." "They don't want CypherCore. They want me. And I don't want to leave my band." I plop down on the bed and pull her back, tickling her. "The only things I want to do are things that won't take me away from you. Understand?" She laughs, squirming and trying to stop me. "Well, college isn't far off," she giggles, slapping my hands away. "I'll be leaving, and I looked at your band's Facebook page. They have tour dates up for this summer." "It's just bullshit dives and fairs and festivals." I climb on top of her, straddling her and pulling her arms up over her head. "But that sounds amazing." I stick my tongue out and lean down, trying to touch her nose. "Are you five?" she squeals, flopping her body and attempting to buck me off. I dart in, licking the tip of her nose. She winces and shakes her head rapidly so I won't get a second shot in. I chuckle, releasing her hands. "Honestly, I don't know why Dane still has that shit up. I told him I wasn't going."
"Yes, you are."
I climb off her. "Ryan, I..."
"Stop," she says. "It's not forever. You have to go. Just follow this and see where it leads."
Right now, I couldn't want anything less. The idea of leaving her makes me really fucking unhappy.
"You and I have had a long-distance relationship for 7 years,
she goes on.
"I think we've withstood the test of time and distance. No one has ever come close to meaning to me in person what you mean to me in your letters. And now that we've met, and I love you," she says, climbing into my lap and wrapping her legs around me. "I don't doubt this. You need to go."
"I just got you.
And I don't want you holding back because of me.
I slide my hands up the back of her shirt, savoring her warm, smooth skin. "We're going to have everything we want," she tells me, laying down the law. "That's the only way I want this with you. If you go and you don't like it, come home. If you do like it, I'll be waiting when you're done." I can feel my nerves firing, and I don't know how to deal with this. I'd rather not think about it today at all. Would I like to drive around in an old, rented bus and play some music this summer? Maybe. That was the plan up until February. But now I have Ryan, and I can't imagine not seeing her every day. I don't see the goddamn point of wasting a minute without her in it. I won't be happier just because I have the music. But she's right. She's going off to college, and although I can too, it won't be the same school. I could go with her, but I can't follow her. We both need our own work someday. A way to be fulfilled. "If you don't try," she says, "you'll wonder later if you should have. Don't put that guilt on me." I give a weak laugh. "Jeez, punch me in the nuts, why don't you?" "If I do this, I have a condition of my own," I tell her, looking up into her eyes. "I want you to write a letter." She breaks out in a gigantic smile. "A letter. I'll write you more than one while you're gone." "Not to me," I shake my head. "Delilah." Her face instantly falls. I can tell the prospect of facing that demon unnerves her. "She left Falcon's Well in sixth grade. I wouldn't even know where she is now. I'm sure she's just a Google search away," which she knows. She's just looking for an excuse to not face it. She turns her head away, biding time, but I nudge her chin back to me again. "What if she doesn't even remember me?" she asks. "What if it was no big deal to her and she thinks I'm an idiot for still dwelling on it?" I hood my eyes. "Any more excuses or are you done?" "Okay," she bursts out like a child. "I'll do it, you're right." "Good." And I flip her over onto her back and pin her down again. "Now, get undressed. I need to make up for lost time while I'm away." "What?" she argues as I pull her shirt over her head. "You make up for lost time when you get back." "Yeah, we can do that too."
Epilogue. Ryan. 5 years later. "Ryan!" I hear my name being called. "Ryan, come on!" I shake my head, amused as I step up onto the curb in front of my apartment building. Delcour's doorman is already poised with the door open for me to make my escape. "No, Bill," I say to the reporter from the Times, as he and a few photographers rush up to me, cutting into my space. I try to veer around them, but they're everywhere. I push through them. "An Oscar nomination for Best Original Song?" Bill Winthrop holds up a recorder in front of me. "You have to be pleased. He has to have something to say. Come on." "He's in the writing cave," I say, making my way to the door. "I told you that before." I turn around, giving him and the other guys who've been camped out here forever a bored look. "Really, you've been out here for months. Take the night off. Go get a date." Some of the reporters and photographers laugh, and shots from their cameras go off around me. "Yes, it's been months since anyone's seen him," Bill chides. "How do we know he's still alive?" I cock my head and put my hands on my hips, making my now-visible pregnant belly more apparent. "Obviously, Misha is well enough to do this, right?" I hear laughter break out again. "You know Misha likes his privacy," I point out. "Will he be at the awards?" "Not if he can help it." And I turn, heading into the building. "You're impossible!" I hear Bill's frustrated shout, and don't even bother to hide my smile. "I love you too," I call over my shoulder. Really, that has to be the most tedious job. Waiting around to see if Misha leaves to go get coffee or pick out a new pair of shoes. It won't last forever, but my husband would rather avoid attention at all costs. I guess that just makes him more alluring and mysterious, though. I think they even created an app, Spot Misha Lair, like it's freaking Pokemon Go or something. I can understand the desire for him, though. He ended up joining me at Cornell for college after his summer tour, saying that his opportunities could wait. We had one life, and he refused to do anything more without me at his side. He'd wait. I'd been worried he'd miss out on some big chance, but Misha knows who he is and what he wants. And he was right. It wasn't long after college before he reformed Cypher Corps, all the original members back, and they began racking up the awards and tour dates. It's been a hell of a ride, and it's just starting. I walk through the lobby, spotting Rika passing by the front desk. "Hey, how are you?" she asks, carrying a duffel bag. I take in her leggings, knee-high black boots, and oversized sweater, and here I am feeling like a planet. When is she going to get pregnant anyway? Michael Crist's wife, who's from Thunder Bay as well, and I have become very close, and since her mom and Misha's dad are suddenly very close, we'll all probably be family eventually. I can't complain. Their whole crew of friends is interesting, to say the least, but they're loyal. I look at her apologetically, gesturing to the reporters behind me. I'm sorry about all this, but she just waves me off. It's happened with Michael when he makes the playoffs, just not quite like that. She laughs. I think he's jealous, actually. But hey, a basketball player is a basketball player. A rock star is a rock star. Don't remind me. She adjusts the bag on her shoulder and keeps walking. Well, I'm off to the dojo and then Thunder Bay for the weekend. See you Monday, and tell my future stepbrother I said hi. She jokes. Will do. And I head for the elevators. I ride up to the 21st floor where there are two penthouses, and there's only one floor above us, and that's the Crists. I love the view, and I'm glad Misha likes to be in the city. We frequently spend time with his father in Thunder Bay, but the nightlife, shows, and concerts are too alluring to stay away from. We like the noise here. Once inside, I smell steaks cooking, and my stomach instantly growls. We have a gym in the building, but I like the classes at Rika's dojo, so I braved the reporters for that today. But now I'm starving, and I need a bath. Arms come around me from behind, holding my belly, and I lean back, feeling instantly relaxed. His intoxicating scent surrounds me, and I need contact. Help me get out of these clothes, I beg. He pulls my shirt over my head and helps me out of my sports bra. I'm only 6 months along, our son is due in March, but I'm playing up the helpless act. The more he touches me, the happier I am. And Misha doesn't like to see me mad. After stripping out of my shoes, socks, and workout pants, I turn around, pulling my hair out of its ponytail. He looks incredible. I like this house arrest he's been keeping himself on. All he does is walk around the apartment all day, half naked and only lounge pants, listening to music and leaving lyrics in random places. They're written all over the refrigerator, on napkins, on post-its stuck to the walls, which he started doing when I freaked out about Sharpie on the fresh paint in the bedroom. It's all a part of his creative process, he says. Whatever. It works, I guess. Come on. He pulls me along. I start to do a bath. I follow him to the bathroom, watching him strip down and get in, and then he holds out a hand, inviting me in. I climb in and sit at the other end of the large tub, smiling gratefully when he starts massaging my leg. The reporters are insane, I tell him. Everybody wants a piece of you. Well, this piece wants you. And he takes my foot, nudging between his legs with it. I slowly crawl up on top of him, straddling him, but not able to get chest to chest with my belly. He takes the small silver pitcher I have next to the tub and begins pouring water over my hair. I arch my neck back, the blanket of warmth coating my scalp and back and making me moan. He kisses my neck. Can I tell you something? He asks gently. I look up, meeting his eyes and nodding. He smooths my hair back, looking at me lovingly. I love you very much, and when we got married, it was my hope that we'd be together forever, he states. But that mirror thing, he points behind me to the wall design I just installed, is pissing me off. I lose my equilibrium whenever I walk in here. I turn around and break into a smile, looking at the array of mirrors installed on the walls, which reflect the mirrors on the opposite wall. Turning back to him, I lift my chin, nodding. You'll get used to it. You say that all the time, he whines. I put up with the gothic fireplace in our converted barn home in Thunder Bay, the sewing machine end tables, the fact that I have to walk through a wardrobe to get into the master bathroom, but this mirror thing... He trails off, and I kiss his cheek. It's a conversational piece. He levels me with an unamused look. I shake with laughter. If you divorce me, we won't still have sex. He twists up his lips. Yeah, I figured. What a baby. He knew when he married me that I liked being creative, even if I wasn't any good at it. I reach over and flip the knob, turning on the shower over us. It falls behind me, but it creates a pleasant buzz. You need to put in an appearance, I say. I hate pushing him, and I normally don't, but sometimes I worry he doesn't live it up enough. Will's been calling like crazy, I point out, and he even bugged me at work today. He says you need to ride the ride while you can. I am, he maintains, and then he tightens his arms around me. I just want to make music with you, and I want people to hear it and love it, but I don't need to be bigger than this. I don't need the hype. I'm happy. I caress his face. Most people don't get a chance to be a god, I say. Are you sure you're not missing out? You won't live forever, after all. No, but my music can. He always has the perfect answer for everything. He's right. He's not missing anything. Would we be happier, sacrificing the time we have together to give it to others? No. And you and me in the lyrics, he finishes. That's all that's important, and I won't tolerate any distractions. I've only got one shot to do this right, and that's what I'm doing. I bring him in, kissing him. I love him so much. But his words remind me of our favorite rapper, and I pull back, unable to resist teasing him. Hey, only one shot, just like in Eminem's Lose Yourself. And I start singing the song, belting out the lyrics at the top of my lungs. He pushes my head back, dousing me under the shower as I squeal in laughter. Hey, what did I say? Dear Delilah, my name is Ryan Trevorrow. We were friends in fourth grade. I'm sure you don't even remember me, but I remember you. In fact, you cross my mind quite a lot. And if you do remember me, then please keep reading, because there are a lot of things I'd like to say. You're under no obligation to listen, but I would be grateful. By now, I'm sure your life, like mine, has changed a lot. Your memories of me, if you have any, could range from resentful to so ambiguous that I barely even register on your radar anymore. Maybe you haven't thought about me in years. But just in case, I needed to do this. Maybe for you, but especially for me. I have a lot of guilt, and I deserve it. But there are things that need to be said, and it's long past time. You see, the image is still in my head. You standing against the wall on the playground, alone, because I wouldn't be your friend anymore. I can't imagine what you were thinking that day and every day after, but I hope you know that what I did and what everyone else said or put you through was never your fault. It was mine, and you were simply there. There's a secret I want to share with you. I haven't even told my best friend, Misha, because it was so embarrassing. When I was 9, I had a routine every Sunday night. At about 6 o'clock, after dinner, I would start to gather all of my hygiene products. Shampoo, conditioner, soap, loofah, clippers, nail file. I'd line up everything on the windowsill above the bathtub. And for the next hour, I'd bathe. That's right. I was in the bathroom, cleaning, scrubbing, and making sure every damn piece of hair smelled like a lily-scented brook in a mountain meadow for an hour. Then I'd finally emerge and begin the moisturizing and nail cleaning process. Good grief, right? But wait, there's more. Then I spent 10 minutes flossing and brushing, and even more time picking out my clothes, which of course had to be ironed and laid out for Monday morning. It was a new week, and it was a new me. I was going to have more friends. I was going to be with the popular girls. People would like me. Because in my 9-year-old head, the bath washed away more than the daily grime. It washed away the old me. And somehow, because I polished up my appearance, my personality would magically be different, too. This went on for about a year. More than 50 Sundays of high hopes, and more than 50 Mondays ending with not a damn thing different than it was the previous week. No amount of soap and water, perfect nails, or pretty hair could change what I hated about myself on the inside. That I was timid. That I was uptight and never broke rules. That I felt so uncomfortable in large groups and couldn't talk easily with people. That my music and movie choices weren't like the average kid. Plain and simple, I didn't fit in. I had nothing in common with other kids around me, and being limited to my small environment, I couldn't find anyone I did have things in common with. I constantly felt like I didn't belong. Like I was crashing a party and people were just waiting for me to get the hint and leave. That was until I met you. We started hanging out and talked about everything. Every day at recess, we'd walk around the perimeter of the field and chat about stuff we had in common. You were kind and funny. You listened to me and didn't make me feel pressured or awkward. I was glad to finally have a friend, until I started wondering why I didn't have more. We'd keep walking and talking, but sooner or later, my eyes would drift over to where everyone else was playing and laughing, and I'd start to feel left out again. What made them so special to be crowded with people? Why did they seem happier and a part of something better? What were they doing, and how were they behaving that I wasn't? I came to the conclusion that I needed to see myself as better before I could be better. And by better, I mean popular. In putting myself on a pedestal with whatever nasty behavior I could, I believed I was elevating myself. And in a way, I guess I was. Being mean got those friends I thought I wanted. Now, there's nothing I can say that makes what I did to you all right. I know that. Even a kid knows how to be nice. But I wanted you to know that I'm sorry. I was wrong, and I regret what I did. It was the first act in a long line of acts that made me a very unhappy girl. And I see now how valuable one good friend truly is, and how little those popular kids actually mean in the big, wide world. I can't change the past, but I will do better in the future. I'm sorry if I bothered you. If you're reading this and wondering why I dwelled on something that was perhaps so insignificant to you, maybe you're surrounded by a great life and tons of happiness, and I'm not even a memory. But if I hurt you, I'm sorry. I want you to know that. You were a good friend, and you deserved better. Thank you for being there for me when I needed you. I wish I'd done the same. Love, Ryan.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Punk 57, written by Penelope Douglas, performed by Matthew Holland and Lori Catherine Winkle. Executive producers Rena Seth and Mike Charzik. Producer Neil Basic. Copyright 2016 by Penelope Douglas. Production copyright 2017 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.